Well, hello there, special ed strategists, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist Podcast, your gateway to the world of special education. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. Today, we will dive into the fascinating topic of holistic learning support for special education. Our guest today, her insights are not just informative, they're genuinely inspiring and will equip you with invaluable tools to support your child's growth. No more waiting around. Let's jump right into this enlightening conversation. Stay tuned as we unlock the tremendous potential of holistic learning support for special education together. But before we get to it, remember, go ahead and hit that like button, subscribe, and share with a friend. Hello and welcome. I am looking forward to our conversation today, talking about the Alexander technique and a holistic approach. I'll have our guest introduce herself and shed some light on who she is and how this comes to play with our students in our house and the students that we support. Welcome.
Thank you, Wendy. I'm really happy to be here on your show. And my name is Gabrielle Saja, and I work with kids to help them feel calm and confident in their body, to feel connected with themselves, to help them focus on their studies, and most importantly, feel good about themselves in family and social situations. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about working with young people is because I actually discovered physical therapy when I was in junior high school. For a career day writing assignment, we were tasked with going to the library, and I've always thought libraries are really magical places. And so my treasure hunting led me to a book called So You Want to Be a Physical Therapist. And there was something about the alchemy of scientific inquiry, helping people and solving problems, and helping people not cookie cutter protocol recipe, but from the perspective of their own lifestyle, their own individual values. So I got out of PT school. And I injured myself really within months of being a brand new physical therapist. And despite having excellent medical care, I was really having trouble getting better. And I was introduced to the Alexander technique, and I just immediately felt powerful and grounded and calm. And it was such an interesting experience to be thinking and connecting with my body. And that helped me feel strong and grounded and calm all at the same time. And quite honestly, I wanted more of that for myself. And I wanted more of that for my patients. And I had patients at the time. So training to be an Alexander Technique teacher was really a milestone in my journey as an educator and a healer. And I think it's so important for kids because listening to the story of a child's life, understanding what makes them tick, what are their heart's desires, and how do their families and their educators set all of these conditions up so a child can grow. And the Alexander Technique principles are a wonderful way to get kids moving forward in their lives so they can be as happy and healthy as adults.
I think it's great that you had said right off the bat that it's not cookie cutter, right? Because we all know that our personal children or the students that we support are not cookie cutter. No two kids are alike. And that really kind of having that connection between thinking and connecting with our body really is going to play out for success throughout not only a classroom, but throughout your life as well. And I'm sure as we talk today, you're going to shed some more light on exactly what the Alexander technique is and how does that fit into physical therapy and how does that better support our students so that they can be empowered with their future life, education, and independence.
Yes.
Can this approach be adapted to fit any type of young person?
Absolutely. And that's what's so exciting about the principles of the Alexander technique. They're universal. We use our thinking and our sensing to make a direct connection with our body so that regardless of the capacity, the capability, where a child is in their life, in their schooling, the principles are the same because a child is learning to stop and notice their body. And from that place, they learn that they have a choice, that there are possibilities for response. And when you feel like you have a choice, you feel like you're in control of yourself. So we start helping kids when they're 4 and 5 year olds, and you and I can benefit. Parents, teachers, all of us can benefit from these principles. You know, to the little ones, to if you're 4 and 5 years old, we say, we're going to teach you how to be the boss of your body. For teenagers, we're teaching them about choice and how they can feel good about the choices, and also how a teenager can really self-regulate. And really, all children need to self-regulate. But for adults and teenagers, we're really talking about how do I work with the energy that I've got today? I mean, you're tired and kids are overwhelmed in school. And so at any moment of the day, they can take a moment for themselves and come back to themselves and refocus and recalibrate and then move forward. And we use the same principles all the time. And what's really exciting is that this is not just a quick fix that works just once, but over time, we're laying down new neurological pathways. I mean, that's based on the principles that we understand today about brain plasticity. So we're laying down new tracks so that over time, our body and our brain become more responsive to our internal thinking and that internal conversation that we're having with ourselves.
Can you take a step back? What you've mentioned a couple of times, the principles of the Alexander technique. What are those principles?
So the Alexander technique is a mind-body learning paradigm where we learn how to stop or pause and then use our thinking to restore our postural support. And it's really about our breathing. And when we restore our postural support, our organs start to feel better. We breathe more easily. When our head is balancing easily on the top of our spine, all of our whole body becomes more coordinated and more integrated. So, two basic principles of the Alexander technique are to stop and perhaps stop during our habit. One of those very obvious habits that children and adults get into is taking a slump. We all can slump. And then we're not breathing very well. And if you're a child sitting in a chair that does not fit themselves very well, and they're not able to support themselves from the inside out, it's going to be harder for them to do their work. And then what happens is they try to correct, and then they over straighten, or they wiggle around. And there's wiggling and moving is really normal, actually. And so what the principles of the Alexander technique do is we stop. And we learn how to ask our body to become more balanced. And from that place, we can think more clearly and feel better. So there's a really exciting new way of introducing some of the Alexander technique principles to kids. And we call that the ready list. And it helps kids be what one of my 13-year-old students called be relaxed and ready. So some education pioneers in the UK, Sue Mary and Judith Kleinman, they developed the ready list, and it goes something like this. And you and I can do this now and whoever is listening, which is to just pause or stop. And then ask yourself, am I seeing? And look around your space, look around the room, expand your visual field. And then ask, am I breathing? And as soon as you ask yourself, am I breathing? Notice most of you probably took a really easy breath, that breath just released. And then can I be soft and tall? So can I be upright without being stiff and tense? And can I be comfortable and relaxed without going into a slump or without collapsing? And when we ask questions, rather than saying, oh, I need to stand up straight, it's a lot friendlier. It's a lot kinder to ourselves. And kids understand soft and tall. Adults understand soft and tall. So we're not interested in a position so much as, how do I feel the best in my body? How do I activate my support mechanism with what started as what we call the three questions. So we just stop. Am I seeing? Am I breathing? Can I be soft and tall? So to little ones, we might say, can you let your head go up like a floaty balloon and your shoulders be like soft ice cream? Now, I will say a lot of adults like that too.
That's a great analogy. I love that.
It is. You know, and
such a visual person.
And kids are too. And it's a game, you know, with kids. I'll say, well, what's your favorite color? And then we'll say, okay, so if your favorite color is bright pink, then think about a bright pink floaty balloon and your head going up like that. And what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? Well, think about your favorite flavor of ice cream. Maybe it's butter pecan or it's cotton candy flavor. Let your shoulders be like cotton candy flavored, soft melting ice cream. And it's quick. And over time, our body learns to respond more and more.
When we think about physical therapy, we're thinking about an injury and then a response to that and coming to a physical therapist. So first, can we define the term injury? And then how does that connect with the Alexander technique in terms of families coming to you and then that support that would take place?
So physical therapists are trained or educated to assess some sort of movement issue. So we might define an injury as something that interferes, and it can be a minor thing, it can be a big thing, something that interferes with a natural or intended functioning of our body. And the intended functioning of our body is different for everyone. And especially when we're talking about kids with different abilities and who are wired differently, their bodies function differently than other kids. And so wherever they're at, we look at what's not working to their advantage, where are their vulnerabilities, and then how do we strengthen those vulnerabilities and create the foundation for that?
How does this relate with, you know, I mean, I think you just kind of touched on the genetic part, but maybe birth trauma, family trauma, how does all of this come together in your world?
So all of these different kinds of traumas can have an impact on our development. And early development, as soon as we're born, it's a very rich sensory, motor, thinking, feeling. It's a feast. And we learn with our whole bodies. And so what ends up happening is that as we mature, if the learning process, if the developmental milestones don't quite all hook up together, then we're left with vulnerabilities. Kids are smart. They develop workarounds. But the thing is that as they mature, some of those workarounds begin to kind of show the cracks in the foundation a little bit. So what a physical therapist does, especially with developmental milestones, and that's some of the work that I do based on the Moskatova method, is we help integrate these developmental milestones, these developmental reflexes, so that the child feels safe, which is necessary for learning and growing, but also so that under normal circumstances, basic functioning is happening, but then also under stresses, we've got the reserves mentally and physically in order to get through that stressful period of time.
I see such a correlation just even in the academic space in terms of the pockets of vulnerability and building that capacity, and that we have students that have those workarounds that hit a grade. Usually I see it third, sixth, ninth, and then first year of college, one of those, and they hit whether the curriculum switches and then those workarounds no longer are working. But I feel like in speaking to parents over, you know, a lot of years, that they've known something was off, mm-hmm. and that it then took to hit ahead for them to say, okay, let's act upon this. What do you say to parents that maybe think something's off, but the school or other professionals are saying, you know, let's wait and see, or it's okay, or they're fine? Do you have anything that you speak to help parents gain that knowledge to come seek your services?
I always tell parents to listen to your own body wisdom. They know their kids best. And I can't tell you how many parents come in with teenagers who only in the last couple of years received some sort of diagnosis or some sort of information from a healthcare or an educational professional that's finally validating something that they've kind of always known all along. And so what I would encourage parents of kids of any age is to listen to that instinct. And then just for yourself, have a physical therapy assessment, have an occupational therapy assessment. In the vast majority of states, more than 40 states in this country, a parent can go see a physical therapist without a physician's referral. And that opens up greater access. We call that direct access. And so a parent can then say, okay, I don't need to rely on anybody else. I can follow my gut instinct and just the sense that I know my child's capable of doing this, but I don't know what's getting in their way. And so a physical therapist can help them sort that out. And then a physical therapist, in the same way you come up with playbooks and your game plans to help kids get through school, physical therapists can come up with a game plan, again, based on that family's values, based on that family's lifestyles, based on what makes kids happy, so that they can meet their goals.
So if we're talking about functioning of the body and developmental milestones, what happens with mental health? How does that come into play?
Cognition, emotional, sensory motor is all related. And again, if something is a little bit off, let's say a kid walked really early. I mean, it might be exciting to say, oh my gosh, my daughter walked at 10 months. Well, that's exciting, but it probably means that there's going to be some vulnerabilities along the way. And oftentimes kids that move quickly through their milestones or have some sort of birth trauma or family trauma, then they might have vulnerabilities with physical activities. They might have vulnerabilities with social skills in school. I mean, kids that don't feel comfortable in their own skin, as we might say, are not going to feel comfortable being out in the world and being confident in a social situation. You know, this idea of safety is so important for learning, and we can be in a safe home, in a safe neighborhood, in a safe school. But if some of the developmental milestones and some of the developmental reflexes are not as integrated as they possibly can be, then the brain is not perceiving the world as safe. And then we can get anxious, or we might get depressed, or we might isolate ourselves, or we might act out in the classroom, or we might be fine all day long. And then that child is so worn out because they've been holding it together to behave really well and be a good student that they get home and then they lose it, right? And so, I mean, I have a parent that says, oh, you know, my teenage daughter, everything is fine when she's with her friends and when she's with school. And then she comes home and there's a meltdown. So they're all related. And the exciting thing is that whether you're doing physical therapy or even Alexander technique, we teach kids both with the physical therapy and the developmental milestones. We're really working at the deeper parts of the brain that are not frontal cortex, right? They're not about executive control. The Alexander principles have an impact indirectly on those deeper non-conscious brain centers, but we use our thinking in a very simple way. And again, whether it's the developmental reflexes that we're deepening and really getting grounded, that helps a child feel calmer. And again, when they feel in control of themselves, when they feel anxious, then they can settle themselves down.
So for the folks that are listening, you know, you have the kids that fall apart at home, and it happens way too often.
Yeah.
Oftentimes parents will then approach the school first and say, and the school will then usually come back and say, well, they're doing great at school. Have you seen or heard any language that could then better support that parent's case to either receive support at school, or how do you help collaborate with the school and educate the teacher to better support the student so that we can support our student with that functioning of their body and that holistic approach so that we are reducing that falling apart at home.
So to answer your first question, I think that a parent being able to articulate that there's a mismatch. My child is behaving A, B, C in this way, and I hear that from you as a teacher and an educator. My child is behaving A, B, C at home. There's a mismatch here. How do we build this bridge, and how do we resolve this sort of observed conflicting information? And I think parents know their kids best, and I'm sure educators hear that all the time. But I think that what educators need to hear and what physicians need to hear is the objective information. And sometimes that's hard. I mean, these are our kiddos, right? I mean, they're our heart and our soul, and we want the best for them. So how can we not get emotional? But we need to, you know, I sometimes say, you know, keep a little notebook. Put some notes on your iPad. You know, if you're sitting in the car at a stoplight and a thought comes to you, speak it into your phone and then record that later. So I think if it's just a simple, okay, I'm seeing this at home, 1, 2, 3, and pointing out the mismatch, I think that's the really interesting thing. This kid is a whole person. How do we connect all the dots? Your second question, can you repeat that for me?
What I was saying is just that. So the parent sees a mismatch, right? Their child's one way at school and then one way at home. But in my experience from an education lens, if we bring that to the school as a parent, they may or may not know, like, now what, right? What can we do to help support that student? So how can a parent get better educated from you and your experience to then bring that to the team, to the school, so that they can help educate the staff supporting the child so that we could all collaborate together?
So a physical therapist in private practice, and again, parents have access to physical therapists without getting a referral from other healthcare providers, does a different kind of evaluation and a different kind of assessment than a physical therapist in the school setting. So a physical therapist in the school setting, they're doing an amazing job, but they don't have the luxury and the resources to spend as much time with these kids that they really want to. I mean, any school physical therapist is going to say, I'd love to spend more time with these kids. So they really sort of focus a little bit more on very specific things based on whatever plans the team is coming up with. What a physical therapist in private practice can do is give parents objective data. Well, the teacher is going to say, I can't read handwriting. Physical therapists like myself in private practice is going to say, oh, well, their grasp reflex isn't fully integrated. So if a child's grasp reflex is not fully integrated, then what we can do in the private practice physical therapist is integrate that grasp reflex. And then that's something that, say, an occupational therapist can then work with handwriting. So the physical therapists do really a whole body, whole brain assessment of all these different levels of functioning at a very deep level, at a very specific level. And then a parent can take that data in addition to their observed data at home and bring that to the school setting. You know, I had a little girl whose mom brought her in for fine motor control. She was time for her to learn how to turn keys in the lock and how to use a knife. And she was having a lot of trouble with this. And of course, that was carrying over into her fine motor control at school and writing. And so we started working on, I looked at all of her developmental reflexes, and there was more than just grasp. Crawling is very important. There are reflexes for auditory visual development, for hand-eye coordination, hand-mouth coordination. Believe it or not, all of these things feed into fine motor control. Now, what was really interesting about this little girl, Olivia, is that she had the energy of like 5 puppies all at the same time. And she was very smart. She, when we would try to do things, she never said, I don't want to do it. but she would distract with a question, right? Kids are super smart. And it might be about, well, Miss Gabrielle, what did you have for lunch today? Or it might be about what she was going to do with her friend that weekend. And so she had a certain level of hyperactivity to herself. So, but her reflexes indicated that that hyperactivity and that questioning was a way of interfering with having to do her hand-eye coordination exercises. So there's the behavioral component, which is affecting family and school life. And then there's the nugget of, okay, what are the reflexes we need to work on? Now, what was interesting with Olivia is that because she would go off in so many different directions, and it was really a challenge to help her settle, is I started teaching her the ready list. And at first, she didn't like it when I said, okay, we're going to stop and we're going to see, and we're going to ask ourselves, are we breathing? And we're going to ask ourselves, if I can be soft and tall and let my head go up like a floaty balloon. And she didn't want to do it. But her mom was helping her do this at home. And after several sessions, with maybe five or six, she came in and she said, you know, I don't like to do the ready list, but I can tell that it helps me. So there's an example of how using the subjective and the objective information, then the parent can take that and say, okay, this is what the other physical therapist is seeing. But there's no doubt that a physical therapist can work with the in-school therapists as a team, for sure.
We love that collaboration. So as students are developing, right, in school, they're expected to sit, and then they have to play, then they're playing outside, then they do their book work. What can be some early signs that our kiddos, that their body is not keeping up?
So they might not be on the playground. They might not be joining in with games. They might be withdrawing. They might end up being the kids that are a little bit aggressive. You know, when we don't feel good about ourselves, some kids withdraw, but some kids act out and some kids push other kids away. And that could be verbally, that could be physically. Kids that are even sitting in classroom that start to sort of curl themselves up into a ball when they're in the middle of class, right? They're having trouble with their feet on the floor. They're leaning over their desk and their head is on their hand and they're practically sleeping with their head on the desk because they're having trouble writing or they're having trouble supporting themselves in their body. So it can be a sign that kids are physically not literally able to stand up tall or to sit up tall, or they could start to complain a lot. They might say, you know, I'm having trouble seeing the chalkboard. I mean, that's an obvious one, but there might be visual processing issues that are going on, not just clarity issues. You know, sometimes super smart kids are participating, but the auditory visual processing is not as well established. So sometimes kids will just keep asking questions and they can disrupt a classroom because they're asking maybe too many questions. And sometimes kids are acting out because they don't understand because that auditory processing isn't quite there. And that's, they don't need a hearing aid. It's just that some of the reflexes might need some fine tuning. So any kind of behavior, whether it's physically based and movement based or something that's interrupting a natural conversation or classroom participation or avoiding homework, all of these are signs that, you know, maybe an occupational therapy or a physical therapy assessment outside of the school would be helpful.
Let's jump into the topic of holistic education. What does that mean for you out into the world?
So what Alexander Technique teachers say is we're teaching kids how to learn. We all need how to learn, and every child needs to learn differently. And one of the things that I know deep in my heart, and this is something all of us know, but we sort of forget it along the way, is that we learn with our bodies. As soon as we're born, we put our feet in our mouth. We're touching things. We see that shiny object, mom's dangling earring, and we grab it. We're crawling. We're exploring our world, and we're exploring our world with our body. And then we start going to school. And by the time we get to first grade, all of a sudden, academics is sitting in a chair and movement is recess. Or then for older kids, it's phys ed. And it's a complete disconnect. It is not consistent at all what's been happening for the first 5 to 7 years of a kid's life, right? And so holistic education is really, I mean, I'm going to say this, all education should be holistic. All educators and all of us as the adults who are responsible for guiding kids into their full selves, we want to recognize that we learn with our body. When a child is connected to their body, and it's so simple to do, they feel like they have control and they feel safe. If I'm feeling really anxious and I can just stop and use my body, my feet on the floor, be aware of what I'm seeing and breathing, I'm calming myself down, and then I feel empowered. Then I feel like I have a sense of agency. And then that sense of agency leads into an activity. And then that activity is successful. And then that child's experiencing self-efficacy. And then mistakes happen. Maybe we don't get good grades, or maybe we had a bad experience. Can we stop and pause and be kind with ourselves and be friendly? Because if I'm feeling supported in my body, then I'm being gentle and kind with myself. And then we regroup and we just keep going and we don't have to dwell on it, right?
Which is an excellent life skill for all of us.
Oh, yes.
Right? So how does that come into play with unconscious and conscious self, like techniques to keep calm and concentrate with perceived unsafe situations? Sometimes, you know, you talked about anxiety. Sometimes a student doesn't realize that their learning is impacting their anxiety or their environment. So how does that come into play with what you do?
So one of the wonderful things about Alexander principles, and what a lot of us as a very large group of Alexander Technique community teachers or teachers here in the Alexander Technique community in the United States are trying to do what's happening in the UK, which is have the Alexander Technique principles a natural integrated part of school curricula. Because if we're learning these principles, we're going to be less likely to be disconnected with ourselves. We'll be less likely to feel bad about ourselves. And so we're, it's this preventive medicine, right? I mean, if we're building a really strong foundation, we're minimizing the opportunity for that, for those moments of not noticing what's happening. So regardless of what is happening, if we practice these skills and very simple activities, then over time, we're just doing this, and that is going to minimize the unconscious things that are happening.
How early can we start teaching and sharing these concepts with our kiddos?
4 years old, maybe even 3 years old. You know, the ready list, we might say, okay, I'm going to stop like a lizard. I'm going to see like an owl. I'm going to breathe like a fish. And I'm going to be soft and tall like a giraffe. And there are also, one of my colleagues has come up with the sign language to go along with that, right? So then you're using your hands, and it's just like any other game we like to play. I mean, in addition to the importance of using sign language, but we're also using a game and using our body.
As you're saying that with the analogies, I could see a teacher easily integrating this into their classroom, right? Regardless of their age of that they teach. I know saying about being a lizard and stuff like that, and ice cream may be more suited for younger kids, as you have shared, but I think we could easily come up with ways to do this in middle school and high school and to really start to practice it. So if they're not, students are not getting it at home, they're going to get it at school. And just like you said, with integrating that into the curriculum, and it's an easy thing to do and to be top of mind.
It's so easy. And I'm so glad that we're talking about teachers, because the principles of the Alexander Technique can help teachers in two ways. First and foremost, self-care. A teacher that has the opportunity to, even for a split second, take a moment for themselves in a very specific way, get grounded in their body, they're breathing a little bit more easily, they're going to feel better about walking into their classroom or taking a moment in between classes. And then the second pillar is that by leading students with very simple activities, like the ready list at the beginning of class. You know, for little kids, you do it at the beginning of class. Kids are going to get crazy. They're going to get out of control. Well, then the teacher can say, okay, everybody, we're going to stop, and then do the ready list. The other way that it's really helpful for teachers to use the principles of the Alexander Technique and the ready list is with transitions. Once we all sit down, when we go from one activity to another activity. And for so many kids, transitions are really difficult. I mean, that's part of the real challenge for so many students. And so if we have this, I mean, in 3-second tool, we're not adding time to the school day. We're not taking away from this huge amount of work that teachers are tasked with accomplishing in a very short period of time. We're actually creating a situation so that kids can easily make a transition. That transition can be standing up. It can be sitting down. It might be for kids before they raise their hand. They might take a moment to collect themselves. So the self-care for teachers is so important. So that I often say to teachers, how do we help you feel almost as good at the end of the day as how you started? And I have had teachers as clients of mine here in my private practice. And I do encourage them to use that. And they tell me that they don't always feel like they can use the principles with their kids, but they definitely use them with themselves. And so just over time, you know, I nudge them, and over time they eventually do use it with their kids.
And it's so interesting as well with our educators who are also parents, and then parents that are supporting neurodiverse children, that this is something that they can also integrate, right? Even though they're many are overwhelmed and not sure what to do, you could do this at a stop sign in terms of stoplight, the ready three technique, or in a shower, just something really quick to help, like you said, feel as good at the beginning of the day as the end of the day. And I think any parent would love to feel that way.
And in my workshops for parents, actually, I have a series of workshops called Summon Your Strengths. How do we build up our reserves? And you're absolutely right. The transitions of being at a stoplight, sitting in the car, waiting for your kids, before you sit down to look at your email, while you're in the middle of the day at your work, any of your transitions. So again, you're not only taking care of yourself in this very brief moment, you're also setting up the conditions in your own body. And kids pick up on that, right? Kids are super sponges. And so when we're taking care of ourselves, and we don't have to be saying it out loud, right? This is all inside of our heads as an adult. Kids are going to pick up on that more calm demeanor, and then they're going to settle down. Now, the fact of the matter is we all blow our tops. We all lose our cool. I mean, it's just part of being human. And so if that happens, you know, a parent has a long day at work or at school, and then a parent goes home and everybody's hungry, but everybody's tired and something happens. Instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't have done that, they might say, okay, I got this. I'm going to stop. I'm going to take a moment for myself. Am I seeing? Am I breathing? Can I feel my feet on the floor? Can I be aware of my surroundings? Okay, go, move on. So it's self-care, it's managing their kids, it's helping their family. But again, it's also being kind with ourselves.
Can you give us an example of where you have seen the parents utilize your PT, Alexander Technique, the holistic approach, and helped kind of build that gap to better outcomes in an IEP? Have you had parents report back to you in any way?
Yes. So I have a young man who is 19, and he came to me for two reasons: self-confidence, and he was born with an unusual hypomobility syndrome. And so we started first with working on some developmental reflexes. And one of his vulnerabilities is that he has a lot of sensitivity to touch. And we call that tactile, as in touch, tactile sensitivity. Well, if you don't feel okay in your own skin, if it's not comfortable to have either normal sensation like brushing against fabric or brushing against a table or someone giving you a hug or a teacher guiding your hand to write, you're not going to feel safe. So we started doing a lot of tactile sensitivity, but there were certain parts of his body, like arms were okay, legs were not. And it's a very gentle, a very specific kind of approach to integrate this reflex. It was just too overstimulating for him. Now, he's 19. He's super smart. I can teach him the ready list. And so what Noah and I did is we taught him the ready list to use before I started to put my hand on his leg so that he could be in control of how that experience got carried out. And so it became a process when I'd say, okay, legs, and he would pause. And he'd do his ready list in his head. And then he would say, ready list, ready. And then we would go on. And so what happened over time is he started to become more confident and started to become more confident at school and more easily able to pause when he was feeling anxious as he was out in the world learning sort of, you know, world life skills for ADLs and whatnot.
Is there anything, as we're winding down, that I did not ask that I should have asked?
So I'm really glad that we're talking about this, Wendy, because when people hear mind body, they automatically think yoga and meditation. Yoga and meditation are great and very important disciplines. I try to meditate as often as I can, and I love doing yoga for myself, and I teach kids and adults simple yoga poses. The Alexander technique is unique. First of all, it's been around for over 100 years, but it's unique in that it's a tool that in the moment we're activating our body's support mechanism from the inside out in a very specific way. What we know from research is that when we expand our visual field and we're aware of our breathing at the same time, we're calming down our nervous system. Our vagus nerve is getting regulated. So it's a very unique, specific, foundational approach that we can use in the moment. And importantly, we can apply it to yoga. We can apply it to our meditation practice. We can learn how to sit more comfortably, do an exercise more easily, sit in our chair and study for long periods of time, sit at our computer and concentrate for longer periods of time. So I think about the Alexander technique as really the foundation of the house that we are. So it's very complementary to other disciplines that are in the mind-body category, but this is truly education. This is sensory neuromuscular education that is happening at both the frontal cortex and deeper parts of our brain.
So how does that relate? I'm just kind of thinking in terms of folks that wake up with, I guess it's high level of cortisol, and they're like revved up, right? Always like right when they wake up, but then by the time the evening comes. So how can we help those folks? And I'm sure there's adults and children that to help kind of, I'm not sure that I'm saying it medically correct, but just balance out their cortisol. Does that, am I saying that right?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. If there's been long-term overactivation of the endocrine system that produces cortisol, right? I mean, we could get into a lot of nitty-gritty science here, but very specifically, when the body perceives danger, the hypothalamus in our brain says to the pituitary in our brain, turn on, everybody's got to get to work. And then the pituitary speaks to the adrenals, which are on top of your kidneys. And the adrenals start to put out adrenaline and the cortisol levels start to rise. During the pandemic, we were all, everybody's stress level, everybody's that whole adrenaline cortisol system was over the top. If there's long-term cortisol issues, there's no doubt that getting in touch with a physician who can address these things is really important. For the short term and in the moment, if we get up out of bed and we just stop and take a moment for ourselves, over time, we're regulating our vagus nerve. And this is the thing, when we use our body to combat a body issue, right? Stress is a physiological in our body phenomenon. Cortisol is hormones, butterflies in our stomach, our chest and our heart rate pounding. You know, these are body issues. So when we use our body, we feel our feet on the floor, using our senses, seeing, using our breathing, that can interrupt that cycle of too much cortisol. And over time, then our cortisol levels start to, you know, we want it a little bit higher in the day, but then we also want to be able to settle down at night too. So the more we practice, then the more we can kind of navigate the natural ups and downs.
Can you recap some really important highlights that you hope parents and or educators are feverishly writing notes about?
I think for parents, I would encourage them, even with a great IEP and special ed team in their schools, I would still encourage them to have a PT and or an occupational therapy assessment outside, because school physical therapists are doing really great work with very specific goals. And outside occupational or physical therapists like myself, we can provide the foundation so that those interventions happening in school can be even more successful. And that's true for any mental health therapists. That's true for any coaches and educational coaches and tutors. So I would encourage parents to do that. I would encourage parents to use the Ready List for themselves as a way of helping themselves get through the day, as a way of being kind with themselves. For educational professionals and health professionals, I would encourage them to also just annually get these kids in to have a physical therapy assessment, refer kids for Alexander Technique lessons. There doesn't have to be something terribly wrong for a kid to benefit from Alexander Technique lessons. I mean, it's a basic life skill like brushing your teeth and washing your face. If we know how to stop and calm ourselves down and learn how to focus and then have that sense of agency over our body and our responses to stimuli in the world, I mean, it's an incredible gift. So for health professionals to bring along Alexander Technique teachers and physical therapists as allies, allies for health professionals, allies for parents, allies for teachers, you know, we're here to support the work that all of you are doing. Again, it's I think that we can be allies and part of the team.
If you had a billboard for parents with one bit, what would it be and why? Final question.
So I hope I'm not sounding like a broken record, Wendy, but I'm thinking as you're driving up 95 or you're on that country road and it's a beautiful meadow and there are hay bales and cows, maybe the first billboard might say, pause. And then you're cruising along and then maybe you're going to see people blowing bubbles and it might say, am I breathing? And then you know what's going to come with the next two bulletin boards, right? Or billboards rather. So I'm so enthusiastic and I'm talking about the Ready List because I know it's so successful and it's such a simple, accessible tool. So I think that when we can take a moment for ourselves and we connect with our deepest self and we feel supported from the inside out, we can better receive the support that we're getting from everybody in our team and everybody in our life.
And your passion is clear, and that just gives me goosebumps because I know that this is going to transcend and really help a lot of folks that are listening. So this has been an incredible conversation. How can folks find you?
They're welcome to pick up the phone and call me. I love talking to parents on the phone. And I think in the show notes, you'll have my contact information. They can email me. I'm certainly available for workshops for kiddos and definitely workshops for teachers and parents. And I will also put some resources for the Ready List, thereadylist.org. Everybody can, after they finish listening to us, they can go to thereadylist.org. There are tons of videos for kids, tons of great tips for kids and parents of all ages. So, and I'd look forward to hearing from everybody.
Absolutely. Or do you see folks in person, online, or both?
I see folks in person and online. The licensing regulations are such that at the moment in time, you have to be a licensed physical therapist to do one-on-one work only in the states that you're licensed in. So I am licensed in DC, Maryland, and Virginia to do online work. But certainly I am available to be anywhere in the country or in the world for online workshops for teachers and students and kids. And then certainly I'm available in my private practice in Washington, DC.
Gabrielle, this was such a treat. I really appreciate your time and our conversation today. And I hope everybody is listening and they can reach out as well. So thank you so much.
Wendy, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Special Ed Strategist Podcast. I hope you found this discussion as enlightening and empowering as I did. Remember, it's all about unlocking the full potential of every child, celebrating their individuality, and equipping them with tools they need to thrive. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Your feedback means the world to us and helps us continuing to bring you valuable insights. Stay tuned for our next episode where we will continue our journey through the world of special education, uncovering new strategies and stories to inspire you. Until then, keep supporting and celebrating the unique abilities of your extraordinary children. This is Wendy Taylor, host of the Special Ed Strategist Podcast. Let's make it a great day. Bye for now.